This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by a very special guest. We've got Dr. Fatima Parooq. Dr. Parooq is the CMIO, the Chief Medical Information Officer of Microsoft's Health and Life Sciences team. Dr. Parooq and I are going to discuss today really the focus on what's needed in healthcare and in our country to sort of reopen the economy, sort of some of the technologies, some things that have to be done related to that. Dr. Parooq, before we get started, let me ask you to take a brief moment to introduce yourself to the audience.
Thank you very much, Scott. Yes, I've been at Microsoft about a year at this point. I am serving in the capacity of the Chief Medical Information Officer for the U.S. Health and Life Sciences Business Unit. I am passionate about data and turning data into insights and action.
What a fascinating spot to be in, to be at one of the largest, if not the largest technology company in the world, one of the most successful, and now Chief Medical Information Officer of their Health and Life Sciences area. What a fascinating spot. Take a moment, Dr. Parooq, and talk to me about how you look at what should be the healthcare industry's guiding principles as the country begins to think about reopening facilities and bringing people back to work. What sort of guiding principles should we be thinking about?
I'll start by saying it's an incredibly exciting and sobering time to be in healthcare and in public health. And as we think about the recent trauma that our country has gone through, we want to make sure that we're going to be doing the right things as we get folks back on their feet. And as we think about reopening our facilities or bringing people back to traditional work environments, we should certainly keep a few things at heart here as guiding principles, as you outlined. And I think that the first thing, and probably the most important thing, is that the safety of our community should be absolutely first and foremost. It's paramount. Whether that involves our employees, our customers, our patients, anybody that may, you know, come into contact with our work environments, those people need to be protected and put first. I'll also say that our facilities must be able to deliver at a certain standard. And so therefore, excellence cannot and should not be compromised. I would also say that science and evidence should inform any decisions that are made. Now, as we think about opening up, you know, numerous different facilities are at different places in terms of where they are in relation to what's happening in our outside communities. And so therefore, our organizations should remember to remain flexible and innovative in the face of rapidly evolving circumstances. I also feel that whatever we put forth as solutions or, you know, best ways to open up should ensure inclusivity and equity. And then ultimately, again, we all have a responsibility to our organizations and the fiscal stability of our organizations, because ultimately we all need jobs. And so those are a few of the things that I believe are incredibly important as we think about safety.
Thank you very, very much. And I heard really six or seven core concepts: safety of communities first, whether it's patients, providers, employees, safety of community top, excellence stays right at the forefront of everything. Science and data drive decisions. Innovation and flexibility. Equity and inclusiveness. And again, all of this done within the framework of having to stay financially viable so you can continue to do these things. Thank you, Dr. Parooq. The next question I have for you is, the current state of COVID-19 monitoring and testing in the U.S., what actions are still needed to ensure workplace safety, and facilitate a return to normal? What still has to be done, and what's the current state from your perspective?
You know, the current state of the COVID-19 monitoring and testing remains grossly inadequate. We know that there still is shortages of testing capabilities, whether that is a supply chain issue or a distribution issue. I believe that changes on a day-to-day basis. But as we think about it, even just going back a few weeks, PCR and nasopharyngeal swabs were probably the gold standard and probably the most effective in terms of quality of tests that were out there. Unfortunately, they are pretty uncomfortable and miserable for anybody who's ever had to go through them, necessitating, you know, perhaps newer approaches. So the newer approaches, you know, might involve some different newer techniques where they're now testing directly for the antigen. They're, you know, testing through blood samples, so on and so forth. And as we think about that, yes, maybe perhaps these tests or this method of testing is a little bit more comfortable. They are a little bit faster in terms of reporting results. Unfortunately, they are also, you know, suffering from high false negative rates. And so, you know, we've got now that problem that further adds to the problem of shortage and supply chain in terms of being able to test communities at large. So as tests become a lot more freely available and widely available, you know, my hope is that we will get to testing significant parts of our population. And that, you know, needs to continue until we have vaccinations that are effective and also widely available.
Thank you. And Microsoft has spent a ton of effort on this concept of focusing on not so much when the pandemic will end, but what needs to be done and in place for the U.S. to reopen, for things to reopen. Can you elaborate on some of the internal factors that reopening businesses depend upon? What are some of the things a business has to do or has to look at to be able to reopen?
Yeah, sure. It's obviously, it is that fine balance, you know, what's happening externally, right, within our communities and what we can do from our own organizational perspective to ensure that we're ready to welcome back our employees. There's a couple of different approaches that I've seen that are in place, you know, as it relates to phased approaches, but all of them have certain key ingredients. And I'd say the first area is the ability to protect and prevent the spread of disease. And so whether that is really looking at social distancing adaptations that you can make by, you know, ensuring desks are perhaps 6 feet apart or enabling remote work for those employees that can avoid the office altogether, you know, those are, again, quick and easy sometimes as we think about enablement, but, you know, from a virtual perspective. But as we think about, you know, reorganizing our office spaces, that can be a little bit more difficult. We should also think about things like cleaning protocols and building services, right? What kinds of disinfectants are we utilizing? How often are doorknobs cleaned off and sanitized? What are some of the other things we need to have in place? Do we have PPE available that is the relevant type of PPE for our work environments? Again, each organization and each work environment is completely and totally different. Again, those are just a few of the things that we should think about in terms of prevention. We then have another layer that we should probably consider, which includes monitoring and early detection. So not so much on the prevention side, but if we do have folks that have been exposed and are symptomatic, how do we actually pick these indicators of disease up early? Do we install thermal scanners at every single door and measure temperature? Right? Other passive procedures we can put into place that will actually help us socially distance, such as, you know, IoT-enabled Bluetooth tracking devices that go off when you're within 6 feet of somebody else to inform you that you're breaking social distancing rules. Do we, you know, have better testing in place where we can actually start tracking those folks that have actually recovered from the disease? And, you know, by then, you know, do we know how safe our work environments are because we have such a high proportion of folks that have actually recovered and actually have the antibody to the disease. So there are things that we can do, you know, those particular areas. And then lastly, what do we do in the event of being able to track ongoing employee exposures? So how are we managing employee health? Do we have processes in place when folks have been exposed? Do they know where to go? Do they go in for testing? Are they going in for monitoring? How long does that monitoring need to take place for? Who manages the clearance of employees once they're cleared to go back to work? And who manages that authorization process? What we're finding is a lot of organizations are not empowered, primarily because of HIPAA and what you can and cannot share with large-scale employers to be able to manage their workforce at the level of PHI that's often needed to determine who's at high risk or who's clear. And so what we're seeing is, you know, greater outsourcing in the industry of folks relying on third parties to manage this clearance process of getting folks back to work safely once they've been exposed and have tracked their symptoms for 14 days.
And thank you. When you talk about the internal situation, internal readiness, similarly, what external factors are most important? And how do you balance the external world with internal readiness at systems, at companies, at hospitals, at every place? How do you balance those two, the most important external factors, and balance that with internal readiness?
That's a tough one, right? I think the recommendation is that each organization should establish some sort of a task force, you know, as it relates to this COVID-19 pandemic or other pandemics, right? That actually can take into account a lot of the information that's happening on an ongoing basis. And when we think about external factors, the things I'm looking for are, you know, looking at the rate of transmission of disease within that particular community. So as we talk about large multi-facility corporations that have offices across the country, you really need to be in full understanding of what's happening in the local community. So we'd like to know things like the R-naught segmented by population type. We'd like to understand, is the spread of disease occurring within the nursing homes in the community? Is it isolated within the nursing homes in the community, or is it widespread community transmission? I'd also like to know about the capacity of each community to cope. So if there is an outbreak within the community, what does that look like from a hospital capacity? Where is the nearest hospital? How many beds do they have? How many ICU beds do they have? Do they have the ability to test at scale, you know, if folks have been exposed to the disease? So there's lots of infrastructure pieces that do need to be in place as we think about, you know, when it's safe for organizations and offices and elective surgical centers to reopen again.
Thank you very much. I mean, it's really a lot of data around what's going on in the community and community spread and other issues. Is it isolated? Is it not? That help drive what you could do internally and what your capacity is to do things internally. So sort of fascinating. More and more talking about hybrid workplace models. Can you talk a little bit about the benefits of a hybrid workplace and outline the 5 stages of this approach?
Yeah, so if we think about how a hybrid workplace might work, it would enable the workplace to carry on in delivering its services throughout a pandemic. And so, you know, I've seen a number of different models out there. This is certainly, you know, this 5-stage one is not the only one that's out there. There's huge variability as well in how folks are thinking about this. But this is just perhaps one model with 5 particular stages, where stage one would represent that, you know, offices and buildings remain closed with perhaps security only in place to manage access to the building. Once we get a little bit better and maybe we've gotten enablement for work from home, we can really, you know, put into place policies for mandatory work from home where anybody who can work remotely works remotely. Stage 3 would be a work from home is strongly encouraged. So those folks that can work from home remain working from home. But if there are folks that do need to come into offices or facilities as essential employees, those folks you know, certainly can come in with social distancing in place, with measures, again, those additional preventive measures in place. Under that model, it would be, again, limited services that are in place in these office buildings. So you certainly wouldn't have cafes or restaurants open at all. You then have stage 4, which might be a soft opening, right? Where you have, you know, PPE in place, you've certainly got adaptations for social distancing, and you might have a few facilities open. So employees and vendors could return to work, but there, again, may be very limited services such as box lunches only. And the last stage is stage 5, which I would say is completely open, where, you know, everybody is returned to work as completely and totally normal prior to COVID, where you have full services in place and you're welcoming employees, vendors, customers, visitors, so on and so forth. And this represents the ideal world where either everybody is recovered or vaccinated and you certainly don't need to have protective measures in place.
Dr. Farouk, you've done a great job of sort of explaining the 5 phases, stages of an approach to hybrid workplace and what a workplace looks like, you know, whether it's nobody's there except for the most just security to really the 5th stage where everything's open. Take a moment and talk to us about how Microsoft is helping its partners, its companies, its clients achieve a safe and effective return to work. Also, take a moment and talk about the 3 areas of focus going forward, sort of, as you've mentioned, preventing, screening, tracking. Just talk to us for a moment about what Microsoft's doing and what some of these things look like.
Sure. So Microsoft is really enabling its partners to support return to work through 3 particular avenues that you've already discussed. So they include prevention, screening, and tracking. So as we think about prevention, the first thing that Microsoft had done was really create a robust tool set to enable and optimize virtual work. So I'm sure lots of folks have heard about Teams. There are a number of different healthcare organizations that have been leveraging Teams to enable a lot of their employees to work from home. Through Teams, there's been a lot of publicity as well on being able to conduct virtual visits. And so I think those are two key areas that we have worked. The next particular area is that screening layer, and that's important as we think about screening from both an active and a passive perspective. So screening can include testing and managing workflows that are creative in terms of helping patients to find tests and seek definitive care. And we've also been working very hard on enabling IoT for passive screening. So there have been examples of thermal scanners being, which are IoT-enabled devices that have been installed for passive screening of every employee or patients coming into buildings. We're also doing a lot of very interesting things with tracking. So whether that is from a symptom tracking and reporting perspective and being able to manage your workforce that is currently out on quarantined or is well and able to work, Microsoft has certainly been doing a lot through its Dynamics and Power Platform on making sure that we can safely and effectively manage our workforce.
Thank you very much. Dr. Parukh, you've done an amazing job in a short period of time of sharing with our audience and sharing with us sort of some of the thinking on what return to work will look like and how critical Microsoft is to that for so many different companies, whether in a remote work environment, a hybrid work environment, or in a fully phased in, totally reopened work environment. We appreciate your time today. Amazing the role you have as CMIO of one of the largest and most effective technology companies in the entire world. Dr. Parukh, I can't tell you how much we thank you for your time today. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Again, thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Fatima Parukh, the Chief Medical Information Officer of Microsoft's Health and Life Sciences team. Just a terrific guest and great insight into what reopening looks like in our country and the tremendous focus of Microsoft on that effort. Dr. Parukh, thank you again.
Thanks for having me.